Blog Talk Radio.
This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media interview. When I was researching my biography, Will Eisner, A Spirited Life, one of the biggest surprises for me was learning that two extremely successful daily cartoonists, Ray Billingsley of Curtis and Patrick McDonald of Mutz, were once students of Eisner's at New York School of Visual Arts. Eisner spoke highly of both men, and he developed an ongoing mentor-style relationship with Billingsley, who was a very young man, just about 16, when he first took Eisner's class. Billingsley's strip, Curtis, currently appears in more than 250 newspapers. It's a steady performer recognized by the American Cancer Society for Curtis's efforts to get his father to stop smoking. And Billingsley takes a detour from the usual storylines every December for an original Kwanzaa tale. Ray, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Ray, you and I have spoken a few times in the past, and I often get the sense that you don't feel a lot of respect coming your way from your own industry. Is that true?
Yeah, actually, that is true. It's been a very hard industry to maintain, and it's very hard because I get the feeling that sometimes people of my color are pretty much ignored by the industry people. We never get nominated for Rubens. You know, book deals rarely come our way. It seems that many of the opportunities that are afforded to our counterparts don't come our way. It's a hard road to travel, and basically what it means to me is I have to work a little bit harder just to maintain my stay within the newspapers.
Have you talked to other African American cartoonists about this? Or
yeah, I've actually spoken with Rob Armstrong of Jumpstart, mm-hmm. and Stephen Bentley of Herb and Jamal, and we sort of share similar stories. Things just don't come our way that we see going to people who may be of similar talent or talent that's really not as good as ours.
Mm. And what about, some people would jump in and say, well, what about Boondocks? That seems to have done okay.
Well, yeah, Boondocks was a product of his time, actually. It was actually pushed because it was the angry black man. It's almost stereotypical of what a lot of non-black people think we're about. We're not all like that. It was sort of revolutionary in its own right. And, of course, you know, for today's times, it was just right. But, you know, just to give one person a voice isn't really giving much of a voice at all.
Mm.
They needed to really expand and let us all at least have a chance to fail at what we were saying. You know, give everyone a chance to voice their own opinion.
Were you surprised when Boondocks stopped that there wasn't another strip like it that moved into its space? That a lot in most of the papers, I mean, I think, and I love, you know, Leo. I don't want to complain about Leo, but Leo and Get Fuzzy and other strips seem to have filled that void as opposed to maybe another black strip.
Right. I was actually more surprised that Aaron quit the job. Sort of disappointed because I feel that we need as many voices as we can get that are different and diverse. But I'm not surprised that they didn't go to replace him because I had heard, you know, through the grapevine that a lot of people were scared of him and what he stood for. And I don't know, it was just sort of odd the way there was a love-hate relationship with most of the people I spoke to, a lot of editors, a lot of newspaper people. They were actually fearful of him.
Hmm.
So Get Fuzzy, things like that, Over the Hedge is much safer. And I could imagine that they would go along with something that they don't have to worry about being controversial.
Are there white equivalents to Boondocks and also to Curtis?
Well, actually, the number one I could think of is Gary Trudeau's Doonesbury.
I wondered if you'd say that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he says all sorts of things political, gets away with it. I don't know how much controversy he gets into because I don't hear about it. But I could imagine that he has in the past, and he probably still does from time to time. But more often than not, it seems like he can just do whatever he wants.
Hmm. And is there a white strip that's the counterpart, do you think, to Curtis?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. I sort of made my strip to be the type where I could do just about anything I want. I can go from the absurd with Gunk, the character from Flyspeck Island, and I can hit on very contemporary things. Gunther, my barber, he can speak on anything that's relevant at the time. And, you know, he gets away with it because that's what happens in barbershops.
Right.
They talk about what's going on. And yet I have the innocence of Curtis's little brother, Barry. So it was a strip where I could do just anything with.
Wait.
Most of the strips, they can't, I don't know, they don't complement a lot of the stories that I can handle. Their characters aren't suited for a lot of the things that I talk about.
Mm. How has the strip changed? You started doing it in what year?
It launched in 1988.
My goodness, you're coming up on 20 years.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Wow. How has it changed over the years?
I think actually the writing's become stronger. The character's much more rounded. And that's what I feel is very important to the maturity of any comic strip, that the characters grow along with the times, especially in my case. Now, if you have something like Wizard of Id or Broomhilda, of course, they can just stay in one time. And, you know, it's just gags. So whatever they do, it goes.
Mm-hmm.
But strips like mine need to progress, and that's what's happened. I've kept up with the happenings of the time. Instead of Barry listening in on, you know, Curtis's little phone calls to Michelle, you know, things like that had to drop because now the kids are mostly into cell phones.
Right.
Oh, and, you know, one of my favorite things I used to do was an imaginary record shop that Curtis and Barry would visit. And it would always change its names and its location because it featured the hardest rap that you could find. And most parents, when they found out about it, they would burn it down. But you see, the thing of it is, that was when rap wasn't really accepted. Now that it's so mainstream, it was a theme that I had to drop.
Mm.
So, the strip grows.
What would be the equivalent of rap in the strip today? I mean, it must be. I mean, there's always a generation. You know, one generation is pushing against something, and the older generation is fighting against it. If it's not rap, what is it?
Right. Well, right now, I still have Curtis dealing with rap, much to his father's dismay. But I'm not on it the way I used to be. There aren't any rap stars right now that are really hitting the charts like Public Enemy used to do, or,
right,
you know, those guys, they've now retired. So it's sort of lessened its impact in the strip.
Could we use a different word than retired? Because I think I was still a music critic when they were playing, and I don't like to think that they retired. Could we just say that they're doing other things?
Yeah, they've gone on. As you see, right now, one of the hardest rappers that used to be out there, I think it's Ice Cube.
Right.
He's now doing family movies.
Yeah.
Are We Done Yet? And this is a guy that people used to fear just seeing him. Now he's doing family comedies.
Yeah.
So time and age changes everything.
Now, I had asked you how the strip had changed in this almost 20 years. And one of the reasons I asked you that was to get into this other subject. There's no way for someone who just started reading Curtis to know what the strip was like 20 years ago because it hasn't been collected in how many years?
Well, actually, I started trying to get it collected in 93, and I haven't met with any success. I had two small pocket-sized books published by Ballantine back in, like, 90 or 91, something like that, and I haven't had any success since. Now, the popular books that are out there now, I have tried to get in with that company for eons, and time after time, they would just reject me. And sadly enough, my last rejection really turned me away from them. They sent me, actually, I spoke with a senior editor there, and she told me that she loved the material, and this is what the company is about, and they like to put the thing out. We were even talking covers and all. And I had three books under consideration. And the last time I spoke to her, she said that the three books were on their way to acquisition. Now, to me, acquisitions means they're going to buy it.
Right.
So I sat back and I was waiting and waiting. And I can remember this. December 27th, 2 days after Christmas, I get this large package back with all my work back in it. With a rejection letter that said, basically, we're not interested in this property now, nor will we be in the future. So basically, they told me don't even try anymore.
I'm thinking there had to be an angry black man in Connecticut that day.
Oh, yeah. Actually, just very disappointed. It's like the rug is being pulled out from under you. And that's part of the thing I talk about, the not getting respect.
Yeah.
From the industry, because they print everyone else. But for a person like me that keeps trying over and over and over again, they don't do it. And, of course, they offer no explanation why. And actually, I tried calling her back, and she wouldn't even take my calls from that point.
Now, so, what about the other strips you mentioned, Herb and Jamal and Jumpstart?
No, you've never seen them either.
That's what I wondered. And so I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, I mean, is this racism or is it something else?
I think it's just ignorance, actually.
Really?
Yeah. It's a bit of racism also because I'll tell you this. This is something that has eaten at me for years and years, but an editor once told me, and not from this book company, but an editor once told me that it was thought that blacks don't read and that what white person would buy this for their kids? And I mean, they said this right to me. So it's just been a thing that I've been living with all these years. That's why I try so hard to overcome it, because I think they're wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder sometimes if it's a backlash of the whole rap industry, where a lot of non-blacks think that we're all like that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not the case. That's why Boondocks made it the way it did. It spoke of an angry, revolutionary black man. And that's been our stereotype. Most times when you see us in movies and all, we're angry, we're out of control, you know, and they just feed into that sort of thing instead of doing something where the rest of us are basically family-type strips.
Mm.
And they just don't want to deal with it.
I don't know.
See, the bad part is about that is that we're not given the chance to fail. You know, at least to give us the chance to see whether or not it can go. You know, Rob has a great strip. They won't give it to him. But it's just something. It's something that they have to be educated on, and I don't think they want to be educated.
Does it? Does a black publisher need to step up and do this?
That might be the case, but also it would have to be a black publisher who has connection with the bookstores more, because you know how things go with bookshelf space and all that, and they'd have to be strong enough to command a good spot. Right now, this other company that I don't want to mention currently commands all the best spots.
Now, my experience, or my sense of these things anyway, is that if a publisher or a TV network senses that there's money to be made, they tend not to see black or white, they see green.
Right.
Is it possible that they just don't see a market here, or are they just ignorant of what the market is, or how to reach that market?
I think they're ignorant because there's plenty to be made in terms of bucks if they really want to sit down and put out a good product. Basically, that's what I'm really dealing with. I want Curtis to be a good product, which is why I work on it so hard and why the stories are, in my opinion, you know, very good. I try to be very original and things like that because I want people to see that, you know, that we can put out a good product.
Mm-hmm.
All they have to do is work with us and sit down and do it. Now, one of the things for, like, TV, it would help if I did have some compilation books because I could sit down with them, send them a book, and then discuss things with them. But without, you know, any sort of compilation, that work is hindered.
It is kind of surprising that BET or someone else hasn't acquired Curtis for, you know, the rights to Curtis to do, whether it be a cartoon or a sitcom of some kind. Has that ever come up?
Also this, the times have changed so much, especially with things like BET, where they would be more apt to take something like a Boondocks than a Curtis. Curtis is a nice kid.
Right.
And, you know, he's not really into, let's say, Ebonics or anything like that. And I don't know just how much they would welcome something like that.
Ray, do you need to F the poor kid up a little bit to get some attention?
Sometimes I think so, you know. many times when I really try to stretch out too much, I might get censored.
Right.
So, you know, I try not to let that happen because, you know, I really don't want to hurt anyone's feelings or step on any toes or anything like that, not through my work anyway.
Now, let me ask you a question. I'm going to play a devil's advocate here for a minute for people who may hear this and go, it's not racism, it's whatever.
Right.
And I think this is the second time since I've done Mr. Media I've used this example, so stop me if I'm wrong. But
okay.
Kathy Geiswhite, is sometimes seen. She's successful, but she's not always accepted as doing important enough work in certain circles, and she doesn't get a lot of respect.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the strip runs and runs and runs. Is there any sense of that is what's happening with you or with Rob Armstrong? Or?
Oh, sure. Definitely, that's what's happening. I don't think that we're just we're appreciated. We're just not respected.
Mm.
And I guess Kathy is getting it because you know, being a woman does have I don't want to say its drawbacks because there are a lot of really talented women cartoonists out there, but I don't think they get a fair shake either.
Mm.
You know, there's Roz Chass from The New Yorker. I see she has a beautiful book that's just come out. But, you know, she should have had it a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
She's been working at it, you know, for quite a while. And, I mean, she's just getting it now. Lynn Johnson, she was different. She proved to be a heavy hitter. And I think it was because of her beautiful artwork and her sensitive stories that really, really got her over. But in terms of respect, I don't know how much she gets other than being a moneymaker. You know, if the strip was floundering or something like that, I doubt if they'd really pay much attention to her.
Let's change gears a little bit. The recent death of King Features editor Jay Kennedy hit you pretty hard.
Oh, yes.
What can you tell us about your relationship with Jay?
Jay and I, we were very close. He would always he would warn me in case of what he thought I was doing that might be controversial. He looked out for me a lot, and he was a good sounding board. When I first started doing controversial ideas, I would always go to Jay and ask him what he thought of it, and Jay would always say, "Well, Ray, we'll take a chance. We'll take a chance. I think this is good, so we'll take a chance." And more often than not, you know, we had good response. Sometimes, even during the worst controversial ideas that I put out there, Jay was always on my side. And, you know, he would tell me different ways of handling the media and all that because, actually, I'm a very sensitive person. And when people say that they don't like my stuff, it bothers me. Mm-hmm. And Jay would just calm me down and send me on the right path. So it was very unsettling when I heard it. The really bad thing about it was Jay had called me up to tell me about a recent controversy I was going through with the Boston Globe.
I was just going to ask you about that. Yeah, that was that was the last time you spoke to him.
Yeah.
And for folks who may not have seen this, the panel, I think it was a Sunday panel, wasn't it?
Right. It was March 13th, actually. I'll always remember that trip because of Jay. Jay called me on March 12th, which was that Saturday, and he told me that the Boston Globe was censoring that strip. And he told me not to worry about it, you know, that it should blow over. Hopefully it doesn't get bigger, and thankfully it didn't. But he told me he was going away, and he would be back in a week on that Monday. And he offered to take me to lunch that Tuesday at the New King Features office because I haven't seen it yet.
Mm-hmm.
And a few days go by. I had sent a thank you note to him over the last controversy saying thanks for, you know, watching my back again and, you know, talk to you when you get back. Then like a couple days later, I got an email from Claudia Smith at King Features. She's a publicist. And it was saying that Jay had died. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I couldn't believe because I had just spoken to him. And I was waiting, you know, waiting to have this lunch with him. We hadn't seen each other since the last Rubens. And, you know, I really liked getting together with Jay. So it really hit me hard.
How long had you worked with Jay?
Let's see. Curtis started 88. Jay came on, I think, at 89.
Oh, so.
So, yeah, we had basically grown up, you know, in King Features there.
Do you have someone else there at King that, you know, will, you think, can will provide you with that kind of support?
Well, hopefully. I know there are some other editors. There's one woman named Evelyn Smith, and I know she's been a good editor for the past few years. But, you know, we have yet to really get close the way Jay and I did. And it's so strange because a lot of deaths in the industry have hit me personally because I really knew these people.
Right.
Judd Hurd was one of them. We used to get together for lunch, and we go to the Society of Illustrators. Schultz was a big one for me because we spoke so often. And it was a strange thing. I would call Schultz. And many times he was busy, so I knew he would call me back.
Mm-hmm.
I called him this particular time, and I waited for a week, and he didn't call back. So I called him again, and he didn't call back. The oddest part was I got a phone call one early morning from some editor from Baltimore, and he asked me, what did I feel about Schultz's death?
How?
And that's how I found out about that. So that floored me.
Well, and I think people, going back to my introduction of you, I think a lot of people would be surprised to learn that you were a student of Will Eisner's.
Oh, yeah. His death, that crippled me.
What do you remember about Will, if you could tell one, you know, quick...
I can tell you this. Will was a tough MF-er. He was not to be played. He wasn't one of those teachers that came in and had all the jokes, and, you know, we had a good time. You were there to work. And actually, by the time I had gotten to Will's class, I had been published quite regularly in New York. You know, I was becoming a fixture as, like, the kid artist of New York. And I would show my stuff to Will, and Will would just look at it and basically yawn. And he said, okay, what else can you do? So he always challenged me to do more that I could do. And actually, I had credited Will with my my superhero, Super Captain Cool Man. I draw that like in a superhero style just to show people I can draw other things. And that comes from Will, you know, making me do different styles. He also helped with the styling of the Kwanzaa stories, just stretching out. Oh, you know, actually, Schultz had a lot to do with the Kwanzaa stories also. Because some of his advice was, put things in your strip that are unique to you, something that no one else can touch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how, you know, the Kwanzaa stories came up. So those were two of the men that actually influenced a great part of my career.
What cartoonists, you know, as you were starting out, and I guess over the years, have you looked to and for influence, or others than, you know, Schultz and Eisner that you admired over this time?
Well, this will sound odd, but my number one favorite was Al Capp.
Really?
Yep, who did Lil Abner. I have his entire series of books, and I mean, what the guy did was phenomenal with the space that we are all afforded. He gave us strong characters, strong dialogue, the stories. He was just an incredible artist and writer. And I looked to him for a lot of my inspiration.
But Al Capp, right?
Yeah, Al Capp.
Okay, I suspect right now I'm not the only person hearing this who's scratching their head going, Al Capp, okay.
You know, all those people who may be scratching their heads, they need to pick up some of those books and read them through.
Hmm.
If you really want to see a fine example of good characterization, good artwork, check out Lil Abner. It's really incredible stuff.
Wow. Okay, I'm still scratching my head, but we'll move on. Now, what about news strips? What do you, when you open the paper, and obviously you open the paper and you make sure your strip is in there every day,
right.
but what strips can you not get through the day without reading?
Oh, well, let's see. One of my favorites of the brand new strips, I think it's called Gals in Football. I think that's the name of it. I also like, I can't think of the name of this one. It has to do with a waitress. I know she's one of the six chicks cartoonists. I forget the name of it, but... I check her stuff out every day. I just like the artwork. She reminds me of Betty Boop, the characters with the big heads and big eyes.
Right.
So if I had my computer on, I could look it up right quick.
No, that's okay. That's all right. We're playing a game of Stump the Cartoonist.
Yeah.
Any others?
Right now, those two are my favorite ones of the brand new ones.
Whose career would you most like to have?
Right off the bat, I would say Jim Davis.
Really?
Because Jim Davis has been seen everywhere,
and
the marketing has been everywhere. I would love to be in that sort of position. And when you talk to Jim Davis, he's so down to earth. You know, he's a cool guy. also, Dean Young, you know, between him and his father.
Sure.
Doing Blondie. These people are so highly successful, and they're just regular down-to-earth people. Also, Mort Walker. Mort Walker has had a steady stream of success with several strips. And, you know, that sort of thing I would like to also get into. I don't know how well he's done with the merchandising. I haven't seen much more than the books. But he's probably had a bit more franchising. But I'm not really up on that. But it's the longevity and the quality of the strips that I really like.
So you're not one of those guys who thinks that these strips that have been around for 30 or 40 years, they need to just stop, move out of the way for a younger guy?
Well, no, not as long as they're still pumping out good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
In that way, that's one of the reasons why I really like Blondie. Blondie changes with the times. I've watched it ever since I was a little kid, and I see all the changes. The artwork is still superior to many that I've seen. And, you know, the ideas are still there.
You know, it's funny. I agree with you on Blondie. As a matter of fact, when you mentioned Dean Young, I was thinking, I can't remember the last time that there was some other type of Blondie product. I think, boy, this would make a great TV show sometimes or a great movie because it has changed. I mean, Blondie has gotten, she's gone from just being kind of curvy to kind of busty, and she's very attractive.
Right.
And you know, the situations are very, you know, modern, if you will, in terms of
the up-to-date.
Dagwood's office. And
dated.
Yeah. So I'm always surprised, although I did see that they have launched, after all these years, a Dagwood's sandwich shop.
I can imagine what that's like, a little bit of everything.
Yeah, over. Franchising those things.
Jared wouldn't like that.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that would definitely not be a place that we'd see Jared.
Now, here's something for you. One of my favorite strips used to be Russell Meyer's Broomhilda. Now, it was about a 15-year-old witch,
mm-hmm.
and, I mean, she was mean, crotchety, she drank, she smoked, she pinched men, she did everything. And I liked it because it was such outrageous humor.
Right.
So, you know, from time to time, I go that way also. I like the good stuff, like the Blondies, to the old-fashioned, slapstick sort of thing.
Right. Let me ask about one other thing, and we sort of touched on it, that you started very young.
Oh, yes.
Business. I remember the first time that we spoke, you were telling me you worked for a kids magazine.
Right, right.
Was that what it was called, Kids?
Yeah, it was called Kids.
Okay, for those of us.
Actually, I started off in this business when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
So I've literally grown up in this business.
And how old are you now?
Boy, wouldn't you like to know?
Well, I think I have an idea. I think we're about the same age.
Okay, how old are you?
Late 40s.
There you go.
Okay.
There you go. I'm looking at 50 in the face.
Okay, and that's why I wanted to mention the name of that kids magazine, because for a generation of us, I think in the early 70s,
right.
that was a magazine that a lot of us picked up had a big influence on.
Funny story about that. I remember I was... 12 years old, I was in my art class, and we had this, I think it was a 20-foot-tall aluminum Christmas tree project that we had to build out in front of this hospital in New York. And I mean, it was cold, it was snowing, and I thought it was a dumb project. So by 12 years old, I was already carrying around like a little pad and pencil, and I was always doodling something. And mind you, my teachers hated that. But I was sitting off to the side, and I noticed there was a little media coverage. I saw a couple of people from the news, hanging about. And a woman approached me, and she asked me what I was drawing. So I showed it to her, and she asked if she could keep it. So I said, sure, why not? And she wanted my name and phone number, so I gave it to her. Back in that time, you didn't have to worry. Kids were safe. So I think that was on a Thursday we were working on that project. On that Monday, I got a call from this woman, and come to find out, she was the editor of Kids Magazine, and she wanted me to come down and try my hand at doing some spot art for a couple of articles. So I went on down there. I received $5 for my first illustration, and the first magazine came out, everything was fine. And then they called me up, and they hired me as, a staff artist. So the life changed for me right after that.
Right.
It seemed like I would go to school, and, as soon as school was out, instead of going to play ball or something like that, I was going to work. And I remained with Kids Magazine till I was 18. And I retired from there as an associate editor at 18 years old.
Wow.
And from there, I just kept on going. I found out that people paid you to draw. And, my father was very strict. He didn't believe in allowances or things like that. So it was a good way for me to make money, legally.
Right. I hear you.
I just kept on doing it. Then I found out about the world of freelancing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was actually a lot of fun. Because you never knew what you were going to be doing next.
Oh, yeah. It's a thrilling job.
Yeah. It's hard. It takes a lot of pavement work. But see, at the time, I was living in New York.
Right.
So all the magazines were right there.
That is an advantage. There's
right.
No, there's
I just
no doubt.
Had to take a subway or a bus, and there I was. And like I said earlier, I was starting to build up a reputation there in the city because I was a kid artist. So many times when I got the magazines, people would be, just surprised to see me. Yeah. So you're that kid we heard about, Yeah, we'll put you on this job. Okay. I'll take it.
Wow.
And I mean, throughout this business, throughout all the years, I have done everything you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
I've done advertising. I've done storyboards, magazine covers, clip art. I've done all sorts of things. Matter of fact, I actually did designs on underwear before they became popular. Those were my designs way back. I did a tuxedo shirt way back. It's like 25 years now. And these things really caught on. I used to see people wearing this stuff.
Well, Ray, we're just about out of time, but I wanted to thank you so much for joining us on Mr. Media this week.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Yes, same here.
And folks, if you'd like to keep up with Mr. Media's Friday interviews, you can subscribe to the site via email at www.mrmedia.com. You can also subscribe to the audio feed in the podcast section of iTunes. Thanks for joining us. Please come back next week for another Fridays with Mr. Media.